because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go. God
bless you. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsin Nye's summary of this week in the Capitol. J.R., we're used to tornadoes in Wisconsin. Are the clouds forming above the Government Accountability Board a Category 2 or a Category 4?
Well, I get the impression, talking to Republicans, that the agency was slated to be abolished well before this. But the Supreme Court decision last week basically had to fuel that fire. And, you know, it's no shock that Robin Voss is calling for an investigation, the GAB, that some of his rank and file members are saying we need to, you know, take this thing apart. When Governor Walker comes out and says on Monday, I believe, he wants to replace it with something more transparent, that's kind of newsworthy, if you will, because it's the governor kind of getting behind the movement.
Right.
So we all know there's a bill pending that they're working on right now. They've been working on for a while, actually, to overhaul the GAB. The question becomes, what's it going to look like? Okay. But it'll be out this fall, and they're going to do something to it. Now, here's one kind of caveat, the political part of this. For Republicans, they've been unhappy with this agency for a long time. It goes back to the recall elections in 2011 when the GAB said, okay, Republicans, you go first, Dems go a week later. Ever since that moment, there's been like building tension, if you will. Now, Republicans are going to take apart the GAB. They try to gut the open records law. If you're a Democrat, you can go A, B, and connect it to C and D and E about other things they've done, turns out government has run in Wisconsin, try and make a case of these guys are trying to shield from your eyes, public, what's going on in Madison. So it might be a difficult case to make, or it might be you have to kind of word that the right way, if you will, but build the case. But there might be, if you're a vulnerable Republican, you might have to watch about open government and ethics and those kinds of things next fall on the ballot.
That was very interesting. But let's go back to the timeline. So four of the seven Supreme Court justices on a Thursday come out and shut down the John Does.
Yes.
The governor's campaigning nationally. The first time he's back in Wisconsin on official business, as you're right, he issues his statement. Legislature should create something completely new that is truly accountable to the people. More so than an investigation, which Voss has called for. I think it's appropriate just to get rid of GAB and replace it. Well, I was surprised. Hours later then, Kevin Kennedy, director of the GAB, issued a statement. That's so rare. He amounts to say, don't kill us.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating. I'm just going to read a summary of it. GAB has established itself as a model to be emulated throughout the country. Policymakers and elected officials should be bragging about and taking credit for the structure and accomplishments of the GAB and ensuring that it has the resources to continue its statutory responsibilities. Unfortunately, it has become more expedient to use the GAB as a political target than to honestly assess its performance. Here's my question. Is Kevin Kennedy the state government's version of dead man walking right now? Is that the reason he uses such strong language?
Go back to last fall. Robin Voss said at one of our luncheons, Kevin Kennedy's got to go. That was almost a year ago now, eight, 10 months ago.
Yeah.
It's been obvious for a while they want to do something. Now, here's what's interesting. The GAB as a model is respected nationally, and that's what Kevin's talking about. When they go to conferences, they get praised for how they operate. But the practice, how it's operating here in Wisconsin, Republicans chafe at it because in their minds, while the judges are supposed to be impartial, these kind of retired judges who aren't going to have any skin in the game, if you will, they believe the staff drives what happens because the staff makes recommendations to the board. How often do you see the board overrule the staff? That's their issue. Something has to be done that the staff has less sway or that there's less, in their minds, a bias by the staff toward Democrats and against them. And that's part of the problem.
But, J.R., isn't job one for the GAB to supervise elections and voting?
Absolutely.
And look at the tests they have. The 2011 Prosser versus Kloppenburg, a major statewide recall lasted weeks. By the way, Prosser, the conservative, won. Then you had the recall against Governor Walker. By the way, Walker, the conservative, won. They've had some. Isn't job one counting the votes and running the elections?
Yes. It's also, though, if you look at the recall petitions, in Republicans' minds, go back to when they said, well, we can't check them. You know, unless you file a challenge, the recall, remember this?
Yeah.
Mickey Mouse and Superman. We have no choice because we don't have the resources to do it. So if you go back, there's just been it's instance after instance where Republicans feel like they're not doing their job. Now, if the GAB, you say, look, we don't have the resources. You didn't give us a big bump of money to handle all these elections. You haven't given us the resources needed to do these things. So they can plead a case of, hey, we're paupers over here trying to do all these things. And, by the way, there's new burdens. Campaign finance laws in Wisconsin have been basically gutted by Supreme Court decisions and federal court decisions in recent years. It's a Swiss cheese right now. It's not an easy job, but you are the referee, and hey, play any sport, football, they always hate the referees. That's what's going on a little bit with this.
Lawmakers come back after next week's vote on the arena. Lawmakers come back in their fall session September 15th. I rate GAB restructuring and campaign finance reform, if they're going to do it, and, oh, yeah, John changes Doe. To the John Doe as a top three priorities for the fall session. Do you agree?
That looks like it. I mean, there's not much left to do in terms of big ticket items. Those are the three that were left over. I mean, go back to December. I was talking to Voss about parts of the session. They talked about those things. Oh, and school accountability, which, you know, never got to the soup they wanted it to be. Beyond that, you saw this week the three new abortion bills, related abortion bills that Andre Jacques put out there. There probably will be some momentum, if you will, to go after Planned Parenthood from Republicans. So it happens nationally with that. But, yeah, absolutely, those are three of the big things you're going to see this fall.
It's fascinating. Okay, now, new subject. I know that was politics, and I know Wisconsin and I got demands to you guys as journalists should figure out who authored, who sponsored, who was the driver of the open records attack in the final hours of the joint finance on the budget. You got those emails and contacts, right?
Yep.
Okay. Well, last
Kudos
this week.
Getting out first. Good for them.
Yep. This week, as you say, the State Journal reported, based on documents released by Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald, that it was Speaker Voss who sought to seal all the, quote, deliberative records, legislators, staff, past staff, governor, DOA. You surprised that it was Voss? And how much political pain is Voss going to suffer because of that, if any?
It's no surprise it was Voss. It was going to be someone from leadership. We kind of knew that. And that was the impression we got from joint finance members, right? Well, I didn't like what was in there, but I voted for the wrap-up motion anyway because I liked these other things. Dale King is saying, I'm sorry I voted for it, those kinds of things. So it was obvious it was driven by leadership. And let's be honest, Fitzgerald has said we were all involved in terms of him,
Fitzgerald,
Voss,
the former newspaper publisher,
the governor's office, they were all involved. So while Voss was the one who may have been linked in the emails, nobody really is clean, if you will, in this case. For Voss, I mean, back home, it's a solid Republican district. He's not going to have any problems with that. In terms of, like, with his caucus, this is not what's going to cause him problems with the caucus. He does have an interesting situation, though, this caucus where you have this breed of freshmen, if you will, who is less likely to kind of play the game, if you will.
The Bob Gannons you're referring to?
Yes, more likely to kind of take off on things and be obstinate and raise Cain, and I don't want to play along to be nice. That's more of an issue for Robin Voss than he wrote some emails directing, if you will, what they should do with the open records.
Well, how did you react as a veteran journalist in the Capitol to the statement from Voss's office? The concepts being discussed by assembly leadership were simple. Returning legislative power ceded to the executive branch and the idea that the legislature should be able to set its own common sense policies on open records and retention of drafting files. Is that any type of response?
It's downplaying what they're trying to do. I mean, that's basically what it is. And that's what you expect. You know, honestly, you get caught in something not so good, try and diminish what it was really about. I mean, yeah, maybe they're I get the impression that their intent, and talk to a few folks, is they want to be able to have an open discussion with their staff, for example, about, okay, what's the best way forward on this? And have some kind of, like, shield that their internal discussions aren't going to be open for everybody to look at. Now, whether that's right or wrong, others to decide. They also feel like if their constituents contact them and say, look, I've got a personal problem with Agency A. Mm-hmm. It's caused my life grief. Can you help me out? That there should be some protection for those folks. Simple concepts. But what they put in there goes well beyond that.
Oh,
it basically guts the open records law.
The broadest claim in the nation.
Shields them from public scrutiny. And that's the problem. I mean, maybe it's a simple concept, but the execution was very, very poorly done.
And it's ironic. Had the changes that Voss, Fitzgerald, and Governor Walker wanted become law, we never would have known who sponsored this, who was the driver, who first asked it for those open records repeal. Very interesting. I was also intrigued. The UW system begins to sort through some of this $250 million two-year cuts. So the colleges, our 13 colleges are 2 years. I mean, they're popular. They have ag agents and extension agents. So last week, Chancellor Kathy Sandeen announced the changes. 83 jobs will be abolished. I ask what their FTE is. That's 1 in 10 jobs. Layoffs will start after January 1. No faculty will be laid off. Then none of the 13 campuses will close, but each campus will no longer have its own administrator. There will be 3 or 4 regional administrators for the 13. Here's my question, JR. When the chancellor says, we're not going to close any campus, you and I are always looking for, does that mean that they seriously considered closing one? What do you think?
Good question, but the reality is, I don't know if they'll ever close a campus, either the UW system or the two-year colleges, because if you think about it, those aren't just educational opportunities in these communities, they're good paying jobs. And if you're in certain places where these two-year campuses are, often rural, hard to find, put industry there because various issues. So if you're UW Superior, you know, you had a cut, take a big cut before. They talked about contracting with private services for janitorial stuff. Remember a couple months ago?
Yes.
They've got issues
up there. Now Oshkosh is offering buyouts. And
they've got issues in these places, but if you're Superior, I mean, you're a big employer in that community. You can't close. I mean, that would be catastrophic in some ways to lose those jobs. And oh, by the way, whenever you have something like this, whether it's this or road projects, who's going to decide? Mm-hmm. And that becomes a thing. It gets caught up in politics of, well, we're the majority. We have these districts in our backyard. We're going to protect them while yours will get cut. It gets really, really messy really quickly.
Well, as you say, in each of these two-year campuses, they are accessible. Mm-hmm. You may not be able to get it in Madison, but maybe you can go to your stay-at-home and go to these two-year campuses. Each of them have alumni and vendors. They have huge economic mm-hmm. footprints in these communities. So you say it would be impossible to close.
Nearly. I will never say never about anything in government, but I can't see how you could find the political will, if you will, to impose that kind of a cut on a community like that.
Mm, that's good. Okay, a new topic. It'll soon be Republican Senator Chris mm-hmm. Kapinga. He easily dismissed the Democratic challenger, Cheryl Shattuck. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she got about 27% of the vote. That's about what she got last November against Paul Farrow. But here's what I find intriguing. 7 of the 33 senators are serving mm-hmm. their first terms. And the new ones, the 5 R's, are Lemahue, Roth, Strobel, capping up when he takes office, and Mark Lyne and 2 Democrats, Bewley and Ringhan. That's an unusually high number of freshmen, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Well, what's interesting to me is look at the legislature as a whole. I went and looked to the Assembly, for example. I got here in April 2000. There are maybe 5-6 people who predate me in being in the Capitol, and that includes Kessler and Barca, who left
and came back.
All right. So that's huge turnover in that body compared to what it was when I first got here. The Senate hadn't really felt that impact yet of the turnover of the new blood, if you will. All of a sudden now you're seeing it kind of trickle up. Yeah. Now Noss, for example, the new senator, but he's been around for years in the Assembly. But you're seeing this new blood. It's a much different legislature than it was before. And what's interesting is a lot of the folks who are there now were either part of the 2010 class, the big Republican wave, that went through Act 10 or was inspired by Act 10. So what you're seeing, plus the maps that are thrown in there, more partisans, people who are more liberal or more conservative than what you've seen before, fewer moderates. I mean, how many moderates do you count anymore?
The M word? You said the M word,
Jim. How many bipartisan votes on big bills? Now, there are lots and lots of voice votes, but on controversial bills, how many more bipartisan votes do you see? Not many. And that's a consequence of what's happened is it's all about winning your primary because your district is safe.
Yes.
And then going to the Capitol and protecting yourself from a primary
challenge. With so many first-termers, is that the reason that Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald led on, they passed the budget first, they passed right to work first, they passed the abortion ban, they went first on the prevailing wage, adding that to the budget, and they went first on the arena. I mean, has Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald had a better budget session than Speaker Voss?
Oh, the perception is, it's really interesting, is that Fitzgerald has become a hero, if you will, to conservative media, because he's led on those things.
Yeah.
The perception had been, until this session, was that the Assembly was a place where things got done, and the Senate was where these conservative ideas went to die. Well, now, it's the Senate is leading, and the Assembly is more of an issue. Remember, with prevailing wage, Voss put out this package to try and put pressure on the Senate.
He said, we're going to go first on prevailing wage.
And they were going to go first on the deal that they reached until Fitz said, I've got the votes, I'm going now.
Right.
And that's what part of it is with Fitzgerald is he has a smaller majority. When he has votes, he has to go to the floor. That's just the bottom line. You can't risk losing anybody. And that's what he does. The budget maneuver was pretty smart, if you will, adding prevailing wage with a different 17 votes than what you got with the 18 to pass the budget.
Give it to the Assembly on a take it or leave it basis. They weren't about to walk away from the budget.
Very interesting. But Fitzgerald, what's interesting, the capping coming in now is, remember on the Bucks deal, Farrell was a yes vote.
Yes.
Now he's gone. So if that Bucks bill goes back to the Senate, by the way, a little bit trickier to pass. If there are changes made, you might lose more Republicans, and capping is not going to be a yes. And oh, by the way, Glenn Grothman used to be considered the most conservative member of the Senate, right?
Yep.
But Grothman was part of leadership. So Grothman, a lot of times, whether it's on finance or in the chamber, say, I don't like this bill because of A, B, and C, but I'm going to vote for it anyway. You're not getting that kind of person anymore in the chamber, if you will, in that caucus. It's a much more difficult task for Fitzgerald to lead these folks forward and get them on a the same island, if you will.
Well, we're going to talk about the Bucks at the end of the show, but let's remember that the Senate passed the Bucks deal 21-10. Mm-hmm. And that they had a few more votes that I didn't expect.
No.
Harsdorff, Olson voted for it. Janice Ringhan voted for it. Jennifer Schilling voted for it. So I don't know that the capping of Ferraro's switch is a sign that that Bucks deal would be in trouble if it goes back to the
Senate.
Unless
major changes are made. That's where the caveat becomes.
That's true. That's true. Meanwhile, the revolving door might continue. I mean, it's Democratic Senator Tim Carpenter won a primary for a seat on the Milwaukee Common Council, which, by the way, pays $23,000 more a year.
Oh, no, by the way, get more done than being the minority possibly for the next
And you don't
years.
Have to commute to Madison all the time. Well, it seems to me that Carpenter is a bit restless.
Yes.
I mean, he's long tenured in the Senate, but he did run for Milwaukee Treasurer, losing to former Senator Spencer Coggs.
Yes.
So do you, if he wins that, let me ask this. His three reps are Reamer, Zamarripa, and Zebnick.
Zebnick, yep.
If Carpenter leaves, would you expect one of them to run?
Oh, very likely. I mean, if you think about it, his Senate district has one of the only majority Hispanic districts in the state, and a second district in his Senate district, Assembly District, has a good Hispanic population.
Right.
There would be an opportunity, if you will, to have the first Hispanic elected to the state Senate in Wisconsin.
Right.
That'd be fairly momentous. I'm thinking about Jocasta, for example.
Yeah, she's a member of leadership.
Somebody else from the community. So that, yeah, you could definitely see something like that come up. It'd be a very interesting primary because it's a really safe seat. So once you win, you're in for life pretty much. And so that's the primary would be all that's all about when it does happen, if
and
it does happen.
It'd be unlikely for Carpenter to keep both jobs, wouldn't it?
It's tough. I mean, Farrell, for example, resigned the Senate seat to go focus on being Waukesha County exec.
Yep.
Coggs kept his Senate seat for a few months until he went off to his job in Milwaukee.
Yep.
So you can do both. Bob Ziegelbauer did them both. But, you know, Bob Ziegelbauer wasn't an integral part with love leadership in the assembly. He came down for his votes. And
he was a D, and then he became an independent.
Yeah. So it's a little bit different situation. It's kind of tough to do both, though.
Okay. Now let's talk about Governor Walker's second week, second official week on the presidential campaign trail. Let's start with finances. The numbers he put up, $32 million raised between January and June, right?
Yes. Between three things. A super PAC,
yeah.
$20 million. Our American Revival is his ideas, you know, nonprofit advocacy group that he founded in January.
Mm-hmm.
And then the state campaign account, which technically isn't supposed to be for his presidential campaign, but probably there are some expenses in there that probably helped him, if you will, build the Walker brand.
So he came in at 32, but Jeb Bush came in at 114 million. Big, obviously a big discrepancy.
Yeah.
But did Walker see it as a win, even though he raised so much less than Bush?
His people feel good about the number for a couple of reasons. One, he wasn't a declared candidate until July 13th, after these reporting periods closed. It's hard to raise money for somebody who's not running, even though we all knew he was going to run. Then declared candidate. Oh, by the way, nobody's in Jeb Bush territory. I mean, Jeb Bush is all by himself. He's got the Bush family, the Bush network. Much easier to raise money, if you will. Now, the test kind of comes for Walker. What's he do the next quarter? Yeah. Can he start picking things up?
Yeah.
Does he have the capacity to not be on a level playing field with Bush, but be competitive? I mean, I think the thing for Governor Walker is this. Come February 1, if that's the date for the Iowa caucus, his advisor Rick Wise said, it's not a must win. I don't know about that. I get the impression, talking to people, he has to do well there. It's right next door. He's going all 99 counties. He's putting a lot of eggs in that
He's
basket.
He's going all out on it.
It's all about expectations in the early couple of states.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you. WisPolitics last week hosted Rick Wiley, the governor's campaign manager. He used a curious term. Governor Walker is a uniter. My eyebrows went up. Were you surprised that Wiley said that, given the divisive Walker policies have been back home?
Unless he was referring to Republicans, because among Republicans, he is one of the few people who can walk the line of Tea Party, business class, social conservative, I mean, all the factions, will, of the party. He has credibility with all of them. So maybe that's what uniter he might be. But as far as, like, getting independents and Democrats, I mean, yeah, he can make an argument that he did well with independents in Wisconsin in Republican wave years in a recall election, but Democrats don't love him in Wisconsin. He's a very partisan figure. I don't get the impression he's going to be somebody who gets to a big number of Dems nationally anytime soon. But in the caucuses, at least, in the primaries, if he can do well in Iowa, if he meets expectations in New Hampshire, and you start building momentum, if you will, that might open the spigot more for money. And if you look at the polls, Governor Walker, if he's not the number one choice for a lot of people, he's number two. Well, what that means is once these folks start falling away, unless a lot of them are going to fall away, 17?
No, they're 16.
16,
yeah.
Well, like,
we're going to show their pictures in a minute.
Name Republicans, but they're more like, you know, kind of people who are off the street, if you will, running for president, if you will.
But you said that, not me. Okay.
as those big names fall away, they're supporting looking for somebody else. Now, granted, like Lindsey Graham had a 0.0 in a poll this week, but they have people who are backing them. When they fall away, they're looking for somebody else. If Walker's number two pick, you can start building a momentum, if you will, to be the alternative to Jeb Bush.
Okay.
And that becomes, like any primary, we have multiple candidates, and one guy who's, or girl who's the, not the favorite of the base, but the establishment type pick.
Mm-hmm.
If you have fewer conservative challengers, it's easier to coalesce conservative voters against that establishment person. But you have a big field of like alternatives, it's harder to beat the establishment pick, right?
Well, but there's a poll, there's almost a poll a day in this race.
Yeah.
And you saw the head counts in three states, Colorado, Iowa, and Virginia. I forget about that. But what about that public policy polling survey? Trump 19, Walker 17, Bush 12. Do you think Governor Walker's happy with that?
I get the impression that for those folks, I think Trump is like the sideshow right now. It's a circus come to town, if you will.
But so much attention.
Oh.
I mean, when the governor has to stand in Iowa and say, I denounce Donald Trump, that cuts away from his message.
Absolutely.
I'm a fighter. Others say they're fighters, but I've won my fights. So that takes some oxygen out of the debate.
Wait a month or two. See how Trump is doing, you know, later this fall. What I wonder is, can Trump sustain this momentum? I mean, let's face it. Got a big bump out of his announcement. He's making a lot of controversial comments. Going after John McCain, who isn't really a favorite of the base right now. You look at those polling numbers, I think like one poll out this week had 50% of Republicans did not like his comments about McCain.
Mm-hmm.
22% did.
Yeah.
All right. There's evidence in those polls of his support sort of taper already because of the comments about McCain. So I'm not sure that he can sustain the momentum he has right now. And let's face it, I mean, like, Marco Rubio got a bump when he announced. Ted Cruz got a bump when he announced. I mean, it could be just the bump for
Even
Trump.
Even Huckabee got a bump when he
it
announced.
It could be the flavor of the month, if you will.
Okay.
Walker, his people feel like they have a good, solid structure in place that he's going to be able to sustain himself, even if there are hiccups. And there have been. Hey, he said Boy Scouts ban on gay leaders protected children. Had to walk that back.
And then he said, I don't know whether people are born gay. You remember that?
He said that. Okay. He called the minimum wage lame. I mean, you know, there are little things that in a Republican primary, probably aren't going to hurt him a whole lot with those voters. But in a general election, a little bit different story. But that's not his focus. His focus right now is on winning Iowa, winning New Hampshire, South Carolina, Nevada, and boom, Super Tuesday on March 1st.
Okay, a Trump campaign senior person was on CNN this morning and again didn't rule out the possibility of a third party. Does Governor Walker fear Trump and a third party?
Every Republican does, because he can. Any vote you peel away hurts. Now, overnight, news broke that there's, you know, looking at a criminal review of the email use by Hillary Clinton with all these.
It's true.
Who knows what's going to happen with that stuff? But if you are in a normal environment where you've got a divided country and you've got anybody peeling votes away, if Bernie Sanders ran as a third party candidate, it would hurt Hillary Clinton, for example. I mean, it's just the way it is.
Okay. We're going to show now pictures of all 16 Republican candidates. I'm showing that to you. Does Walker stand out, JR?
He is in top tier with Bush, and then depends who you want to talk to. I mean, Trump's the flavor of the month now. Rubio gets talked about. Rand Paul gets talked about. But look at the rest of them. I mean, Cruz, I don't get the impression from talking to folks that Chris Christie has his problems because the base doesn't like him.
Meanwhile, John Kasich gets in, the Ohio governor. Trump is so discussed, nobody's paying any attention to the latest entry in the sweepstakes.
A lot of these folks is they're pinning their hopes on one state. For example, Kasich is going to New Hampshire. Christie is going to New Hampshire. Their thought is New Hampshire is a place that is less evangelical than Iowa. So if I make a good showing in New Hampshire, I could possibly bump myself up, if you will. Problem is, only one person can get momentum out of New Hampshire. And so maybe two. So if you're a Christie or a Kasich, that might be the end of your campaign come New Hampshire.
Okay.
Likewise with Iowa, what if Santorum does poorly there? He won it last time. What if Huckabee does poorly? I mean,
I understand. This is too much fun. We got to stop. Right. Okay. Time for the WisPolitics stock report.
Well, rising. We'll go out of the box. Donald, a little bit kind of off the ledger.
Okay. Well, he's a excuse me for interrupting. He's a Milwaukee County judge.
Mm-hmm.
He announces for the Supreme Court seat now held by Pat Crooks. And his first campaign finance report is six figures,
$110,000.
Now, veteran reporters like you and I, the first thing we look at, how much of it did he loan himself?
$7,500.
Not much.
He did, though, get four donations of $10,000. So that's one thing you notice, that, you know, almost half the money came from either four of his associates or himself. But that was in 2 weeks. Here's the thing. He is not well known outside of Milwaukee. People in Madison aren't sure if he's a liberal, a conservative, is a moderate. You know, where is he at in the spectrum, if you will? Can he keep raising money at that kind of a clip? Because that was only 2 weeks. I don't care where it came from, a two-week clip for Supreme Court candidate, first time out,
yep.
that's still a good report.
Okay.
Now, here's what's interesting. Look forward to the primary, possible primary. Now, Pat Crooks has not said he's going to run again. Most folks don't think he's going to. Let's say he's not going to run. Kloppenburg is in. Joanne Kloppenburg ran in 2011, became a hero for some progressives because she was the vehicle, if you will, for the Act 10 proxy fight that that race became with Prosser.
Yes.
She did well, has since won and has sought a spot in the appeals court. You have Donald, then you have maybe Rebecca Bradley,
maybe.
A favorite of conservatives. If you have a three-way primary, usually you have liberal votes, conservative votes, who lock into a candidate. Where is Joe Donald's avenue to win a primary, to advance out of the primary, at least finish second, to get to the general election where he can be a moderate, if you will? That's a huge question.
Where does he fit? Because, like you, I had never heard of Joe Donald, even though he's a Milwaukee County judge.
He was appointed by Tommy Thompson? I don't really know.
You don't know on the continuum of liberal-conservative?
I've heard Democrats talk highly of him. He had, in his announcement, a quote from Gerard Randall, a former UW regent appointed yes. by Tommy Thompson, refused yes. to resign his seat
right.
when Jim Doyle took office. I mean, I'm guessing it's somewhere in the middle, if you
okay.
will. But talking to people, they're not sure. I mean,
okay.
he's been running this drug court in Milwaukee for a while. I've heard people say good things about how he runs his court, but what's his philosophy? That'll be flushed out, if you will, in the campaign trails.
Okay, so he's rising because his first campaign finance report,
good money.
Six figures, good money.
Yeah.
Mixed.
Jennifer Schilling, she voted for the Bucks deal. I mean, we talked about this last time we were talking about going into that vote, but
yeah.
for Democrats, it was an interesting decision, right? Three of the Milwaukee Dems are going to vote for that. We knew that already. Or at least they sent signals they would, if they get changed, they would. Democrats as a whole, though, you're looking at going, look, this is a good issue to beat up Republicans with in the election next fall, because you say, look, they gave $250 million to billionaires who own for an arena while cutting $250 from UW, while having schools tread water, while cutting A, B, C, D that you like. Their priorities are off. But the three Milwaukee Dems are on board because that's a good thing for their
yep.
district.
Harris, Dodd, Taylor, and Larson.
The vote ended up being bigger than we thought because yes. Labor got behind it. So Janice Ringhan got on board, for example. It's easy for her folks who live in Janesville to go up 43 to Milwaukee and work on those projects. For Schilling, she may have done what's best for the state, if you will, in terms of keeping the Bucks, but gave up a political issue she could have used next fall and the fall after against guys like Moult and, you know, these vulnerable districts.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what's interesting, though, is she also stuck with her Milwaukee Democratic caucus, those folks. And two, she may have sent a signal to the Milwaukee business community of, look, we want the majority back, and if we win it, I can work with you. Don't be threatened by us. We're going to be good people to work with if we win back the majority.
Were
someday.
You surprised? And correct me. I think Rick Gudex voted for that.
Yes.
Even though he's up next year and he only won by 600
Wait.
Votes. I think he did. Anyway.
Blanking for a second.
All right.
But if you're any Republican out state, it's a dicey vote for you because it can be used against you next fall if you're up on the ballot of, again, what did you guys do for schools in UW versus these Bucks guys?
And Senator Gudex, if you didn't, we will correct that next week. Okay, falling.
John Chisholm. So he is looking at the prospect right now of the shadow of Eric O'Keefe hanging over him for the next couple of years because the Supreme Court blew his investigation out of the water, shut it down, ordered the materials returned or destroyed, basically chided this investigation as being illegal or not illegal, but based on a faulty premise.
Yes.
And Eric O'Keefe is saying, okay, you guys came after us. Now it's your turn. He talked about having people petition Governor Walker to remove Chisholm from office, which the governor has the power to do that. I don't think the governor would ever do that because the firestorm would create, if you will,
Absolutely.
To do something like that. But he can also go after him in court. He can sue him for malicious prosecution on down the line. He could really make his life difficult because, A, O'Keefe feels like he was wronged. B, he has a bunch of conservatives who feel the same way. And C, they've got resources to do it.
Okay. Okay. Now, before we end, next Tuesday. The assembly, mm-hmm. Tuesday, the assembly is going to take up the Bucks financing package. Prediction, pass, votes, final vote, how many assembly Democrats?
I almost can't.
Does it pass?
I don't know if it's going to get, I think they'll get it through.
Why would Steinke schedule a vote if they don't
so
have
I think
the votes?
They get it through, but what changes are they going to make, if any, to that bill? That's what's kind of got me on, because talking to a couple of Democrats this week, they're like, well, we don't know what's going on yet. You know, they haven't talked us about it. So if they keep the Senate bill, they can get it through, you know, good. I was wrong about what the Senate vote was going to look like, so I even hate to put a number out there for the Assembly because we thought it would be 17-16 in the Senate.
Yeah, we did.
You know,
we
and
did.
It came out being 21-10. So.
Okay, here's my prediction, and I'll eat plenty of crow a week from today. Passes 58-39 with 14 Democratic votes. There, am I wrong?
If Labor gets those guys on board, that would be a good guess. But if I'm an outstate Democrat and I'm in either a swing district or one that's even close to swing, I would never vote for this thing. Oh, by the way, if I'm in Green Bay and the Packers got no state tax dollars, all local tax dollars, running at Lambeau Field, the most hallowed building in the state of Wisconsin, how could I vote for a building that would, a project that would give state money to them, but not to the PAC? I just can't see how you do that.
Well, okay, but I get Reps Young, Kessler, Johnson, going, anyway. Okay.
Milwaukee folks, definitely. I see
definitely. Okay, we're having too much fun. We better end it. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for this week.